sit down. What if it is?
Okay, thank you.
Meeting will come to order. Don, will you come up and sit with us, please?
Would you mind me right here at the end?
Yeah. You want to run over the definitions, Don, on page one?
Are we going to work from the bill today?
Are we what?
Are we going to...
No, we're going to use yellow books.
Even on the work session right now?
Yeah, we've all got our notes in our yellow books.
But I was wondering with respect to amendments.
Right.
Are we going to consider amendments today?
Yeah, probably.
With respect to amendments, we'll work with the bill. Is that correct?
No, we're going to
work
with the yellow book, and then John will transfer them to the bill.
Right.
Why? Do you think this is impractical?
No. I really want to do it.
Well, I've got all my notes in my yellow book.
Yeah. I was just wondering with respect to specific amendments that have been proposed. Those are probably directed towards the bill rather than the yellow book.
I'm sure, although some of them are towards the yellow book, towards old law that wasn't, but that'll be John's problem.
Yeah.
Are the section numbers different than the bill?
Yes, right inside your folder is a sheet that directs you back and forth.
What was the reason to have it? Different section numbers.
Well, Don put the old law in the yellow book so that you'd get a complete picture, which then when he just put the new law in the bill, changed the numbering system.
And we put a table in the bill converting that. The reason we numbered them in the yellow book, we could have left those sections unnumbered, but for the purposes of commentary and relating back and forth, it makes it much easier for the reader to find his way through the yellow book if the sections are numbered, even though it's a section that we don't restate in the bill.
Well, Don, specifically my concern is with number 11, reasonable cause means that there is a substantial objective basis for believing that a person to be arrested has committed an offense. And then from page 2, you go over to page 3, and the quotation on the right-hand column says that reasonable cause exists, and so on, without requiring that at the time of the arrest, the guilt of the person arrested be more probable than not. And it seems that the intent to me in adopting the phrase reasonable cause is to require a lesser burden than would be required under probable cause. And I can't quite see the logic of doing it, A, because the Oregon Constitution requires probable cause, the United States Constitution requires probable cause, and all the case law is developed about probable cause, so I can't see the reason for switching to reasonable cause.
Well, this was a judgment call on our part, Senator. Just a judgment call on the part of the commission whether or not we were going to stick with probable cause or reasonable cause. The ALI used reasonable cause. The reasoning there was that we were defining the term, we were defining it in somewhat different way than we had ordinarily thought of it, and therefore this was the reasoning that was also adopted by the commission when we drafted this. I'm not so sure that we changed the test all that much.
If you look at the
whether we call it one or the
text,
other
text, the intent seems to make it a lesser degree of proof than probable cause, because it says without requiring that it be more probable than not.
Question whether you suppose whether you're looking at a 60-40 test or a 51-49, or in terms of it's difficult to really put your finger on this kind of a definition to say it's more probable than not. It can't be reduced to a mathematical equation.
Yeah, but it is in the Constitution more probable than not.
Madam Chair, was it your intent to lessen the burden of proof from probable cause when you put in reasonable cause?
Well, we felt it wasn't our intent to lessen the burden. It was our intent to insert a definition that seemed reasonable to apply, particularly in the warrantless arrest.
Well, what's the matter with probable cause? Everybody knows what that means. Every volume of the Oregon case is probably defined at least once. And I think that clearly, look at these cases, that reasonable cause is less than probable cause. And this, right over here in this citation, we have State versus Williams. It's funny the way they say it, but I think that's what they're saying. Saying that be more probable than not really begs the question. More likely to occur than not to occur, or more likely to happen not to happen, that's the test of probable cause. And they use the word probable to define probable.
Well, as far as the term's concerned, we could have called it probable cause and then went on to define it the same way we did. And of course, you could still make the same argument that we were changing it. But
I don't think you could. Because probable cause is in the Oregon Constitution has already been defined by the courts. You'd be making a statutory definition. So you'd be amending the Constitution without a vote of the people.
Well, Senator, I'm not sure I'd agree with that. But no, I don't think that it's a standpoint of this overall code. This isn't a term that as far as the commission is concerned, if this legislature is not comfortable with that term, I'm not prepared to argue the point. Frankly, I just don't. With respect to the purpose of this code, we take that definition out altogether, I think, without hurting the code.
Well, I'm not comfortable with it, and I certainly feel that the way it's written, it implies that a lesser test is being put to use, and I think it's squarely against the Oregon Constitution and the United States Constitution.
What do you put?
We didn't reach that conclusion, Senator, and the ALI did not reach that conclusion, certainly with respect to the United States Constitution in their draft.
Well, if I can read words, it says, without requiring that it be more probable than not, and that to me means something less than more probable than not.
Well, yes, but they also... This standard expresses the demand of the courts that it be possible to explain and justify the arrest to an objective third party. I don't have the ALI draft with me, but my recollection is that there was no... There was no feeling or no belief on the part of the ALI that they were writing anything that was contrary to anything that was required by the United States Constitution. And we did discuss the fact in the commission that this is, you know, we're used to using probable cause. We're used to that term.
What did he say? What did you call Smith and
Smith is called
John Tried Burns again.
I'll tell you what they may be over whatever. The retired children over there, and all of a sudden, I went over there for a few minutes back, but they might have stayed through elections and they're down there.
I wrote them a letter, said I couldn't come. And invited a little girl to come and see me. Some retarded child.
Mm-hmm. Have you any thoughts, Dick?
Well, I got a couple layman's questions. If you don't like reasonable cause, you have to put something under 11 there, don't you? Do you put probable
cause? Not necessarily,
cause?
Senator.
You don't?
No, we don't necessarily have to define that. We thought it was desirable to define it.
Does probable cause then just something that you take for granted because of case law? Is that what you're talking about then? If you don't define it here. If we're going to pick up the search and seizure section as written, then we ought to define probable cause, shouldn't we?
Well, of course.
I'm just trying to be logical. I'm not a lawyer.
my recollection is this was the position of the district attorneys, that we should not define this term, reasonable cause. But I'm not sure about that. It seems to me that they felt that we were trying to write in a constitutional standard because of the definition.
You ever try writing?
Although there is a present statute that does speak in terms of probable cause.
Which one is that?
Well,
do we have Supreme Court comment on probable cause?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, yeah. Is there any one that's definitive?
Well, one of the latest cases is John Burns' case.
They fall back on that.
In Chapter 133, Senator, but I can't.
Carroll case. You better. All you have to do is go through every place you had a reasonable cause, substitute probable cause, and strike out the definition.
Well, or we can define probable cause.
I think I'd do that. Don't shy away from it just because it's tough. I've got another problem. I'm sure you've picked out the best information from the American Law Institute, but what you quote here doesn't look like it helps me very much. And if there's nothing better than that, I think we better start over. I'm sure you picked out the best they had on it.
Well, I didn't pick out all they had, obviously.
Some is worse, huh?
No, some may be better. This was, this is a judgment on my part.
Yeah, I didn't mean to be sarcastic about your...
Valid
but,
place here is a reason for using this standard, Senator.
Well, the language there is just about... It's just not helpful to me.
Well, Well, as a matter of fact, Senator Brown, if you'll look at section 107 in the yellow book, ORS 133.310, under the existing subsection 3, the term reasonable cause appears. When a felony has in fact been committed, et cetera, et cetera. And he, meaning the officer, has reasonable cause for believing the person arrested to have committed it.
Well, there's different tests for different things.
Yeah.
Well, this is well, the test we're looking at is the test for an arrest, is it not?
Well, it'd be for a search warrant or
for
anything.
A lot of things.
Well, not within the framework of our definition, though, Senator, because we're talking about substantial objective basis for believing that a person to be arrested has committed an offense.
Here, 133.
So we do limit the definition.
133.110 has the requirement of probable cause.
Yeah, that's one of that's issuance.
Was this section 133.310, which you referred to there on page 60 of the yellow book, was that something that was put in last time for the new code?
No. No, that's been in the statute for some time. I couldn't give you an exact date, but no, that was not put in.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. No question.
Well, this is surely just a problem of semantics, isn't it?
Well, it's pretty substantial.
Well, in either case, can you weigh this with the pharmacist's scales or with a surveyor's rule?
I want mine weighed pretty carefully.
That's why I say it's semantics, because what's carefully?
Now, here's
our authority.
Just looking here at some of the annotations in the Penny case, the 65 case, says whether or not there exists probable cause or reasonable grounds to believe that a crime is being committed in the officer's presence is the probability, as it would appear. So they're going to be mixing the definitions.
We're looking at the number 11 definition, reasonable cause, and going back to the Constitution where it's probable cause. And looking on page 3 where the ALI seems to indicate that reasonable cause is less than probable cause.
What's the question as to whether it should be
reasonable cause or whether we should retain probable cause?
Commission recommended reasonable cause.
Why, you know, Joe?
The ALI definition.
But look at their rationale in the last three sentences.
You have to get geared up.
have to start thinking here.
Now, my understanding of your concern, Madam Chairman, is not the term, but the definition.
Both. The term that I think implies something less than probable cause, and the second, well, and the second is the use, why not retain probable cause, because it is the constitutional term, and all the case laws defines it, and I don't see any reason why we couldn't just substitute probable cause and write a definition of it. Have you ever tried to write a definition of probable cause?
No, I haven't. It becomes rather circuitous, I think, is the difficulty. It's probable because it's probable. We're saying it's reasonable because there's a substantial objective basis to believe that the person has committed an offense. I submit there is a difference.
Which can be less than a probability.
Well, wouldn't it be the other way around? It seems like I could define reasonable as being much more strict than probable.
I think it's the other way around.
You read this, even what you got there, in the annotations, or the commentary.
What case?
Page 3.
Well, it's the right case, isn't it?
No, it's the ALI comment.
I thought that was an Oregon case.
Well, State versus Williams is cited.
What section?
It's on page 3.
What makes you think reasonable is less restrictive than probable?
When you read that commentary.
Yeah, I read that, but I don't.
You're right.
It says that in defining, it says when reasonable cause exists, and it goes on to say what it is, and it said without requiring.
That at the time.
The guilty person.
Here's State versus Williams.
Oh, I see what you mean now.
I think
probable cause has always been the standard. And as you say, the case law Don says it's in my subcommittee, and honestly I can't remember, and I probably should have the minutes here so that I can make reference to them. Maybe you can have Mildred bring up the minutes, or I'll get them and keep them in my office. Is your recollection any better than mine with respect to substitution?
Well, as I was saying before you arrived, that this is a new term, and it is taken from the ALI, and it is not, and I don't mean to state, nor do I think we imply here, that this is the same thing as probable cause. I'm not saying that at all.
You're saying that it is lesser or a greater standard.
We're saying that the commission's position was that this was, no pun intended, a reasonable term to use to apply to the test as a test to apply to the validity of an arrest. And as we say in citing the commentary from ALI, without requiring the guilt of the person arrested to be more probable than not at the time of the arrest. Yes.
A lesser test, then.
Yes, to that extent, yes.
Well, then clearly it's unconstitutional.
No, I don't.
The Constitution says to have probable cause.
Well.
The Oregon Constitution says, and no warrant shall issue except upon probable cause supported by an oath or affirmation.
Section 9.
And the United States Constitution says, no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by an oath or affirmation.
Seems strange that the ALI would change that.
Yeah.
Must be a better rationale than what we have here. They wouldn't do it haphazardly or capriciously, certainly.
Well, I want you to know that notwithstanding the fact that my client is still in the penitentiary for this third armed robbery that he committed, that the court was wrong in affirming his conviction.
I agree with you.
The only reason he didn't get life was that the judge said that he didn't really think he intended to kill the clerk when he shot at him. But he didn't. He wasn't the one who did it. That was it. Strike that.
That's the only reason he took the case, wasn't it?
I'm sorry I can't help you. I'm inclined to think that we encounter difficulties if we don't follow the Constitution. And I can't remember the discussion.
Well,
should we be friendly adversaries? How can we define a standard for the reasonableness of a search warrant as something less than probable cause if the Constitution says probable cause?
Well, we're not using, we don't use reasonable cause in search warrant.
Or does this relate to then?
This relates to arrest. And
for the warrant?
And the definition is limited in its application to an arrest.
With a warrant?
With or without a warrant. It would apply to the issuance of the warrant by the magistrate, or it would apply to a warrantless arrest by an officer.
Okay. Well, then the constitutional provision isn't binding, is it?
Well, it's securing their persons.
Give it. If the probable cause comes later in that provision. No law shall violate the rights of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, etc., etc., semicolon. And no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched.
And the person upon to be probable seized.
And the person or thing to be seized. But this section relates to searches and seizures. Fourth Amendment. Isn't it? Fifth and sixth.
You're alive.
Huh?
Are you alive? Hello. Does the American Law Institute go to this point any further that we're worrying about?
Oh, yes, they discussed it at greater length than I've cited in this commentary.
Didn't they touch on the constitutionality or the applicability of this part?
I can't honestly respond to that, Senator. I don't remember.
I'd have
to look at their at the book, and I don't have it with me, but...
Well, I don't see that this serves any useful purpose by putting in reasonable cause to begin with. It serves creating problems, but we'll just take it out.
Do you see a distinction, Keith, Madam Chairman, between a reasonable cause to arrest and a probable cause to search?
No, I think the Fourth Amendment applies to the arrest, to a warrant arrest.
It says a warrant arrest.
It says a warrant for the person to be seized.
So, I don't think a person, an officer, can arrest a person without a warrant with any less evidence than you can with a warrant.
Well,
maybe he can, and that may be why over there in that by the existing law, which is page 60. Does use reasonable cause.
Yeah.
Do you not agree that there's
where do you get that survey stuff? You got a machine up there?
I'm going to say a higher standard should
be. Huh? Looks like vodka, but it's really gin.
Pass it around.
Jackie Gleason.
They have a.
Well, here's Brinegar, the United States Supreme Court. The rule of probable cause is a practical, non-technical conception affording the best compromise that there has been found for accommodating these often opposing interests. Requiring more would unduly hamper law enforcement. To allow less would be to leave law-abiding citizens at the mercy of the officer's whim or caprice.
Well, you see, where I hang up in trying to argue the commission's point of view, Don, is the situation that exists on a search incident to an arrest. And if you permit reasonable cause for a warrantless arrest, and then you permit a search incident to that arrest, you're really permitting the search based upon a reasonable cause. Right?
I would agree that, well, yes, I'd agree to that. And I think existing law permits that under existing statutory law. ORS 133.310. Authority of an officer to arrest without a warrant uses the term reasonable cause.
Do we change that?
We change it, yes, because we do put in the term reasonable cause. We take it out one place and put it back in another. But then we amend that. So that's on page 60 of the book. We amend the section primarily to deal with the misdemeanor arrest.
Comment.
Madam Chairman, the only comment is that I think that the district attorneys would probably be more comfortable if it just said probable cause. This has been brought up in our meetings, and the question was raised, why put in a new phrase which may result in additional litigation to clarify?
Mr. Snellfer?
I think I'm inclined to agree with the comments just expressed. We are talking about probable cause, and as you read through the commentary, I was looking at section 102, for example, pages 56 and 57, talking about the issuance of an arrest warrant, and the commentary cites the U.S. Supreme Court cases, going right back to the requirement of probable cause. You have an arrest warrant and a search warrant are both based upon the Fourth Amendment, which requires probable cause.
I move probable cause. The only question I have is whether or not we should codify it.
Are you moving to expect reasonable cause where it appears in the bill, subject to probable cause?
Yes.
Okay.
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 Yes. I get Don's feeling with respect to that.
Well,
we don't have a term defined.
If your motion is what Keith says, why not have John work with Don and try to write a definition of probable cause to supplant number 11?
All right, I have a question in my mind. Let's see what they come up with and consider it. I'm not sufficiently definite in my mind that we should even put it in.
When you don't put something else in there, you got to vote against this whole search and seizure situation.
Well, Will, did I ever tell you the story about the weasel and the rabbit?
I've been the rabbit.
Okay.
Tell us the story.
Well, it went like this. The rabbit was going down through the forest one day, and the weasel jumped out from behind a tree, and he said, "Brer Rabbit, I'm going to eat you up." The rabbit got scared, and the weasel started chasing him, and they ran and ran and ran, and finally the rabbit ran up into a tree and knocked on the owl's door and said, "Mr. Owl, you're the wisest man in the forest, and I'm scared to death. Brer Weasel is going to eat me up. What'll I do?" And the owl said, "Well, that's easy, Brer Rabbit." He says, "You just change yourself into a weasel. You won't have any more problems." He says, "Oh, thank you very much." And he left, and he was singing and skipping along, and about 5 minutes later, he says, "Good God, how do I do that?" So he ran back out of breath, and this time the owl was really mad, being disturbed. He says, "Mr. Owl," he said, "I really appreciate you helping me out. But," he says, "how do I change myself into a weasel?" And the owl says, "Son," he says, "that's a detail, and I just deal in matters of policy."
That was a big help.
Yeah, I think it was intended to be a big help.
Well, there goes all of our audience. You got any more jokes you want to tell?
Can you do? Have you got a better one? Maybe they'll come back. Thanks for trying, pal. I love you for your effort.
I would suggest that they try to come up with something in defer making a policy decision on including it until we see the language.
Okay.
Well, we've got the other motion.
What's the other motion?
Just send the two probable cause and reasonable cause throughout the book. Wasn't that your motion?
No, my motion went to the definition alone. I think. Oh, yes.
I thought I lost it.
All right, discussion on the motion to substitute probable cause for reasonable cause.
We're dividing the question then. Are we still going to talk about a definition?
Yes, yes. Discussion on the motion.
Question.
Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Keith Boone?
Aye.
Senator John Ray?
Aye.
Senator
Hoyt? Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye.
Well, we did a lot of work already.
Well, I suppose you want to go home now.
We're going to quit for the day. We took all the amendments for the day.
We've only got 50 pages to go. Be gone. Okay. Are there any other questions on the first section on definition?
It takes an hour a section, I tell you.
Madam Chairman? There's an amendment that was submitted by Lawrence Durr, Assistant County Counsel for Washington County.
In your folder.
Look in the folder on the.
Is that on sub 8, section 1?
Yes, it is.
When they include County Counsel? Is a County Counsel provided for in Flores? Any place?
I'm not sure whether it's provided for by statute or whether they just counties have it. I know it's a common practice to have county council now, but I'm not sure that's what it's statutory.
Well, I think we passed a bill some years ago to authorize them to do that. I'm pretty sure we did. But where it's at, I don't know.
Under this
proposed amendment, they refer to ORS 203-121, allowing home rule as...
Yeah, that's where it comes from.
You don't have to have a home rule to have a county council, do you?
County council doesn't prosecute criminal cases.
Well, I guess sometimes they say sometimes they do, though, what he did,
well,
said. That was his testimony, wasn't it?
Well, they don't.
That was my understanding, that his point was that with respect to county ordinance violations, that would be handled by county council.
That's not...
Or that might be handled in some counties by county council.
They do about the same thing as the city attorney.
Failure to conform to a zoning?
Zoning or... but those are not criminal.
How about sewer assessments? Failure to pay a sewer assessment.
Some county ordinances do carry criminal penalties, I believe.
They have the authority to do it.
Littering, I think some of the dog control county ordinances have penalties.
Well,
John, what statute did you say?
There are two that he referred to. The first is 203-121.
Well, read it to us.
As far as I'm concerned, there are three subsections. First subsection, as used in this section, board means board of county commissioners, county court, or county governing body of a county, as the case may be. Subsection 2, unless otherwise provided by a county charter or legislation enacted pursuant thereto, the board of each county may appoint a person or persons licensed to practice law in the state of Oregon as counsel to advise the board and other county officers to render services in connection with legal questions of a civil nature arising in the discharge of their functions, to prosecute violations of county law as defined in ORS 203-810, and to provide such additional services as the board determines.
Read us 203-810.
Titled Offenses Under County Law, Jurisdiction, Prosecution. As used in this section, county law means a county charter adopted pursuant to ORS 203-710 to ORS 203-790, and legislation passed by a county pursuant to such charter. County offense means any crime or offense defined or punishable by county law, and except as may be provided otherwise by county law. The justice courts, district court, if any, and circuit court for a county having a charter adopted pursuant to these ORS sections have jurisdiction of county offenses to the same extent as such courts have jurisdiction of crimes or offenses defined or made punishable by state law as determined by the maximum punishment which may be imposed therefore.
Senator Keith Burns moves to amend the definition. Subsection number 8 under general definitions in section 1 of Senate Bill 82 include county council. Any problem?
Nothing. I know we'll be there.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Keith Burns?
Aye.
Senator John Burns?
Aye.
Senator Roy?
Aye.
Madam
Chair? Aye. I didn't participate because I didn't agree with the amendment.
We give you permission to vote, though.
Oh, don't you?
John, you didn't hear him read those sections, though.
They definitely have jurisdiction over offenses. Prosecute offenses.
Well, this raises a question in my mind that I talked to Don about the other day, and it was a subject of some discussion with Judge Jim Ellis concerning some bills that are in on the House side to conform city or major traffic offenses presently provided for by city ordinance under the jurisdiction of the district attorneys for purposes of classification of crimes, and speaks to the policy of making the district attorney, the state officer, the one responsible for prosecution of crimes. I'm not going to bleed on this, but...
What does this have to do with that?
Of course, the reason we have city attorney in here is because we finally passed Carson's bill to let the city attorneys prosecute crimes. Remember? Remember the...
Well, yes, I think there's another reason, though, too, Senator, and that is that under the criminal code that we passed last time, under our definitions of offenses and crime, clearly under offenses, they include violations of city ordinances. In other words, a city ordinance that carries a jail sentence is, under the criminal code, a crime. By statutory definition under ORS Chapter 161.
Okay. Well, I'll keep my vote aye.
But,
well, Jeff,
I mean, that was one reason, certainly.
Yeah, more or less, the planning is that we have a bill in that I don't know if this really answers your question, but that the Judiciary Committee would function in the interim and rewrite the Motor Vehicles Code, both substantive and procedurally, and deal with the traffic courts when your problem might be cleared up.
Okay, all right. I'd rather, I suppose, err in favor of putting it in if it isn't needed than keeping them out if they are needed.
No. For how long?
Over a half hour.
Well, we can't do anything.
Good.
Was that a new, is that a, that's just in inserting county council
in number 8
after city attorney, includes a city attorney or county council?
Well, you'll have to pick up the language from the statute that you read.
Okay. I won't hold this up on that. Okay. If I tell another joke, maybe everybody else will believe it.
I make that.
Just move the adoption of the article.
I move the adoption, Senator Bill 80.
I refuse to entertain the motion.
I meant to make clear to Section 1.
One way to run a railroad.
Okay, Don, we're on Section 2.
If there are no questions, I think I've said about all I can say on these sections. I'd certainly try to respond to any questions or comment on any other proposed amendments to Article 1.
Okay, on Section 6, I'm confused about this commencing an action with the issuance of a warrant. Where does that come? It refers back.
Yes, prosecutors commence the warrant under 7, the warrant or the process is issued. That is new, yes. And it does work.
That tolls the statute.
Yes. Right. Once the prosecution is commenced, then the statute stops running.
Now, how's this going to work out in practice? Let's see that. The old statute section is what? We have the statutes here.
Yeah, we comment on
131-130.
Yes, 131, yes. Now it states it's commenced when the indictment is found and filed with the clerk of the court, or when the indictment or complaint is filed and lodged in the court, or with the officer having jurisdiction. And as we indicate, this adopts the model being used that the warrant of arrest.
What
commentary on page 7?
I understand that, but what's the problem?
That's what
the problem.
Well, the question was, does this change the existing law? And the answer clearly, yes, it does.
What's the existing law?
Well, under 131-130, an action is commenced when the indictment is found and filed with the clerk of the court, or when the indictment or complaint is filed or lodged in the court.
In other words, just let it be commenced by filing with it.
Well, but you see, we also have in here provided that the warrant is executed without unreasonable delay. In other words, this could untoll the statute if you just sit on it. Make no effort to take action on the warrant. We felt that this was a more reasonable balance that when the warrant is issued, that should toll the statute, but at the same time, there should be some provision in here to allow for stale warrants where no attempt has been made to execute on them.
Yeah, I think the middle three paragraphs on page 7 on the right-hand side speaks to that. The ALI commentary notes that there is a danger that a warrant may be issued and allowed to lie around without a diligent effort to execute it. Draft requires the warrant be executed within a reasonable time. Requirement that information be filed and checked with some state.
I still don't understand why you've changed it. What do you think the practical effects will be?
Well, the practical effects would probably be negligible, but at the same time, as we indicate here, that even though the warrant is issued, there is the possibility that it might not be executed or an attempt be made. In other words, that the action be filed merely to save the statutes from running. And this would presumably make the prosecutor more diligent in seeing that once the warrant has been issued, that it is an attempt is made, and that the purpose of filing the complaint or getting the indictment, even though you may not know where the man is or have any idea, is just to save it from running. In other words, I think that's certainly a consideration.
What you're saying is, under the present law, it's commenced when the indictment is found and filed. And here, it's commenced
when the warrant is issued.
When the warrant is issued, whether that's a warrant of arrest pursuant to an information or whether it's a warrant of arrest pursuant to an indictment, but you put the qualification on that the warrant has to be executed within or without unreasonable delay, and that protects against a situation where you file an indictment and don't issue a warrant on it, and then come back 6 months later.
Alderson suggested that it needs further clarification as to whether a warrant is executed if there's a hold put on a defendant serving time on another charge.
Judge Alderson. Serve him an OSP, but he's not going to get out for 10 years.
Yeah.
That's covered by the agreement on detainers, though, isn't it? The guy's in an institution, and the detainer, he files the detainer papers and brings it back. I don't think there'd be any problem in holding that the mechanism for involving the detainer agreement is part of the reasonableness that Don's talking about in this section.
Mr. Snalford, do you have anything on Section 7?
Comments or opinions?
Yes.
Well, Madam Chairman, I think it's a good policy decision. I think it's something that should be adopted because it's designed, I think, to
expedite
matters and not, as Senator Burns said, not have an indictment returned and then have the arrest warrant just not issued for 6 months or a year until some appropriate time, and then zingo, issue a warrant and go after the guy. I think it would work a substantial hardship in many cases to a defendant that his arrest is delayed.
As a practical matter, and I don't know in your experience, Bill, because they're a whole lot more sophisticated in later days than we used to be in the old days, but there were lots of informers and characters against whom we'd always have a standard number of warrants on file. And if you wanted to go downtown and get some information from them, and they didn't provide you with the information, you'd take them into the Black Hole of Calcutta. When it might have been 6 or 8 months before then, it's still within the statute that you'd filed it. As a matter of public policy, is that good law enforcement? The commission said no. And I guess that's why we did it.
Mr. Roberts, your comment is only that it should be placed in with the pleadings rather than where it is?
Yes, my only comment was as to the location. It just seemed to me to be awkward to, as Don said, untoll a statute. When was having told that it looks to me like thereafter it should be raised in a different area by a motion to set aside or something, for a reasonable delay.
Do you have any questions, Senator White?
It would still be subject to that motion.
On section 11, eliminating the 60-day provision on support prosecutions from 131-360, is this going to result in any form shopping, do you think?
Pardon me, in any what?
Form shopping?
Difficult to answer. You mean on the part of, say, a mother who has a dependent child moving from one jurisdiction to the next? I would doubt it. I'd seriously doubt that there would be any more forum shopping than there is presently, in view of the, particularly now, in view of the fact that so much of your child support is. Criminal standpoint is being more and more handled by the AG's office in some counties, but and traditionally, I think in this state, we've had some counties that have been more aggressive in prosecution of non-support cases than others. But, we felt that it's really a rather artificial, really an artificial kind of. Of a criteria put into the statute when we were talking about support, and that really the case development of the 60-day provision became a matter of substantive law with respect to, you know, pleading and proving a non-support case. Mm-hmm. And to show 60 days in the county, and the commission felt that. I really don't think there'd be much to be gained from form shopping. And I think it would further have the advantage that you can have a serious case that should be prosecuted where criminal standpoint that or. Nothing can be done until you go through that magic 60-day period. Deal with that was sound policy.
How about 12.2, parts of bodies?
This was one that gave us a little difficulty. And particularly when we start talking about parts, part of a body, but the question was raised, if we just say body, we can put in a definition and define body as meaning, body or any part thereof, but you're right back where you started. It's not unusual. In fact, just yesterday, this was not an Oregon case, but the question about Santa Cruz, California, the skull, parts of.
I move we
parts of victims have been found in that county.
Let's have one Corona come up and testify.
But I think that's certainly an excellent example. You may not have it's certainly not unusual to have a homicide, criminal homicide, where you have a complete body.
Well, the thing I understand is we hear about these trunk murders or people that are put in the back of the trunk of a car across state lines. As I read this, that means that a murder committed in Idaho would have to be prosecuted in Oregon if he got arrested in Arlington. And I think that's kind of silly. Maybe it's present law.
Well, he could also be prosecuted in Idaho, too.
Well, it's...
Well, it's
prima facie
evidence.
Is that in present law?
Prima facie evidence. We need to look at 131.239.
You've got that little separate statute.
And also 240 perhaps might be on point.
Is that a better definition, and is this better than that, Don, you think, or not?
Is the definition in the proposal better than
240?
I have to refresh. We thought so at the time, but I don't have 240.
I'm sorry, Don.
Subsection 1 of Section 12 deals with the same thing that 131.230 does.
I think that Section 10 covers what 131.230 covers, but Section 12 is designed just to make it more definitive.
Well, sub 1. Sub 2, I don't think sub 2 has any counterpart in the existing statutes.
Well, a question arises.
With respect to the part of finding the body within the...
Even if the body was found in the state of Washington, if there was some evidence that the crime was committed in Oregon, it can be prosecuted here. But if there's no evidence that the crime was, it wasn't a bloody room or something, the fact that there was part of the body found here and part of it over there, you could give it jurisdiction, huh? You know, we got the Peyton Allen case. There's been a lot of Washington, Clackamas, Multnomah County homicides where the body was found out in the other county, but the prosecution took place in Portland because there was some evidence to show the corpus delicti occurred in Multnomah County. Absent that evidence, but the finding of a part of the body, you can do it under this provision, right?
Yes, it does give you. And of course, what we're talking about here, we're talking about not venue, but jurisdiction, state jurisdiction.
I understand, but I was analogizing. I think it's helpful.
Well, supposing the cadaver was found in the back of an old plump well in Clark County. It was obvious the body had been dead for several weeks. And suppose the person was identified as a Multnomah County resident, and you found out, got some dope about what happened to her. Who'd have jurisdiction?
Well, if I was available as a witness to testify that I saw you shoot her.
But I'd get you first.
Then it would be in Portland.
Just because you got dragged to the DA, I didn't vote for him. Well, it seems to me like that this question arises here, and maybe I'm just nitpicking, but...
Well, I think it's covered, isn't it, Don?
Yeah, I think that's covered.
Okay, where is it covered?
10.
Yeah.
Either the conduct that is an element of the offense, or the result that is an element of the offense occurs within the state. Now, if there was no evidence...
10-1.
There was no evidence that the crime had occurred in Oregon and the body was found in Washington, then the jurisdiction would be in the state of Washington. But if you didn't have the evidence, you wouldn't have a case. So it's a moot question.
It becomes rather academic, really, isn't it?
Well, we've got the commentary about the guy that sends the poison to Portland, and she goes to Vancouver and dies.
Yeah, now this is section 12 again we're talking about.
Yeah. In section 18 on motion for a change of venue, you omitted 131.420 sub 3 where it's for purposes of delay. That didn't bother you at all.
Took out the criteria, but if I recall, Don, there's some case law on this. The court says that, of course, case law was rendered pursuant to the statute, but it appeals went up because the court refused to grant a change of venue, and the court said that.
That to be frank, Senator Brown, no, it didn't bother us, I guess, because we didn't put it in there. But I don't speak to it in the commentary, and
let's check the minutes on that.
I could.
make a note on that, John.
We can check, see if there was any discussion. My recollection is we did not discuss that question.
Well, we say there in 18 that it can, when it can be made. Then we say in 19 that it can be for prejudice. And then in 20, we incorporate sub 2, but of course we didn't have the delay bit. Now it could be perhaps in the delay business, a motion for change of venue, if not made for purposes of delay, may be made in any criminal action in certain district court when the case is at issue upon a question of fact. That could be, we could amend section 18 by the insertion of that language to perpetuate the statutory reference upon which the cases are based.
Yeah.
And I think that's worthy. I suggest when we get to former Jeopardy, we'll probably want to have everybody here to discuss that.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. And John, if you made a note of that last one, I think, unless there are any further questions up to page 16, that will adjourn as of this point.
Okay, I'll leave my constitution here. Unlike Justice Black, I generally carry it to bed with me.
Can we get some more of those?
Yes. Yes. I don't know whether I got it from legislative council or from... Clay Myers.
Okay.
I'm sorry I'm late, but I'll be more punctual.
Okay.
How much more than Jerry?